Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S., a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brook and attorney at law Alan Phillips. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts and questions. Let's go!
Founder of Homeopathy World Community, speaking with our regular co-host, Alan Phillips, attorney at law from North Carolina, and Greg Glazer, constitutional lawyer from California. Today is July 19th, 2012. Thanks so much for listening to these free, informative, and educational broadcasts every week. And I have a smile on my face as I listen to the intro music sharing across the world all of this information and learning together with these experts. You can be part of this movement by simply telling your friends to listen to the show, send them an email with a link, tweet it on Twitter, post a share button on Facebook, and actually, those social networks are really a great way for other people to learn about the shows, the Dig, StumbleUpon, Reddit, and you can copy the embed code and put it right into your own blog or website. Favorite the show and become a regular listener. And I love getting the reminders, because if you are forgetful like I am, you will get a reminder right before the show. You can contact myself, Debbie, at homeopathyworldcommunity@gmail.com, or you can find Greg Glazer at www.civilactionnetwork.org and Alan at thepandemicresponseproject.com. And we're very lucky to have both of these people speaking with us today about, I know we have a new topic today. So if everybody can hear me, you can introduce yourself and we'll get started.
Hi, Debbie. This is Greg.
Hello there.
Today about our important topic, which is part two of, we talked about it last month, and essentially the topic is the case for the human race. We're going to be acknowledging the evidence that vaccines cause harm, and that they are part of a larger depopulation agenda. And we're going to look at some of the history there, dating back to the Nazis, and looking at it today, and then closing with some peaceful solutions that we can propose.
I'm looking forward to the peaceful solutions. It gets me very depressed to hear all of the negative parts of it. I already did a show last Monday on rape, and I had a hard time getting through that show. So let's swing up on the bright side as much as we can.
Well, okay. let me dive in with a quick point too here. I just want to, and this is Alan and Greg and Debbie. Good afternoon to both of you. Good morning to you, Greg. A pleasure to have both of you here as always, and a pleasure for me to be here as well. I've been involved in the alternative vaccine movement or community since my 18-year-old was born, and I spent many, many of the past 18 years, probably the vast majority of them, frankly, either just ignoring completely the so-called conspiracy theories, or if I spent any time at all, it was in bewilderment or amusement. But I kept seeing certain kinds of information over and over again, or kept being pointed back in the direction of some of these so-called conspiracy theories because of information that I kept seeing. And I have to confess that in more recent years, I have looked more closely and taken more seriously some of these ideas.
It's not like you, Alan.
It is out of character for me, and
yep.
It is very much in character, though, for me to play devil's advocate, whether that's my legal training or personality. I frankly think it's both. I tend, anytime somebody throws out an assertion, to hear the assertion and to also want to argue the other side. I mean, that's a really good skill for an attorney to have. If you don't know what the other side's going to say or can say, then, of course, you can't be prepared for it when you go to court or interacting in any other way on an adversarial legal issue. But this is one that was really difficult because the implications are so profound and so far-reaching. And so I just wanted to add, if I may, Greg, and I'm going to turn this over to you, my brief comment that I see evidence for one of two things, either a deliberate agenda to control and perhaps even ultimately depopulate internationally, or at very best, a lack of concern for that as an unavoidable effect of current policies and practices. And there's a point at which where even if you go out of your way to give benefit of the doubt, there's a point at which where if you get far enough into this, or as I have gotten further and further into it in my own intermittent ongoing exploration, where you got to say that this is impossible for the people who are causing certain effects or taking certain actions to not recognize and understand the implications of what they're doing. And so that's where, and you hear the reluctance in my voice here and my reluctance over the years. I still struggle with it because, as I have said often about, let's say, just a smaller piece of this, just the vaccine controversy in and of itself, you know, if the anti-vaccine people are right, then we live in a very dark time, in a very disturbing time. And I think that's what makes it so difficult for people to even have the conversation that we're going to have today, let alone to actually consider it as a very serious possibility, reality. But Greg, with no more of me getting in the way, take it away, and where do you want to take us to start with?
Yeah, you bet. For our regular listeners, they're going to know that I'm an evidence guy, very objective, and I like to focus on historical examples and then also tie those into conclusions that we can make as a populace. And so let's start with what a vaccine is. And we'll start by taking an example. In 1916, the Rockefellers used a lab in China to manufacture the typhus vaccine. So, you know, let's just take that one example and look at what it was. They were harvesting pus from an infected human, and they injected that pus into a pig, and then the toxins were later harvested and mixed with chicken and turkey egg albumins, which were later put into a glass vial and called a vaccine. So, and that was, back in 1916. Today, it's even worse. Today, let's just take a look at the MMR vaccine, and you'll see this is poison, and it's even worse than poison. What they do is they take attenuated live measles and mumps viruses and they propagate it in chick embryo cell culture, chick like chicken. And then the Wistar RA27/3 strain of live attenuated rubella virus is propagated in a human diploid lung fibroblast, which is cultured from an aborted human fetus. And then a growth medium, which is supplemented by a fetal bovine serum, is also added into the mix. So, what is a vaccine? It is a chimera. It is a living beast, in a sense, that is injected into a person. Now, this vaccine is supposed to combat a virus. Okay. Well, what is a virus? A virus is a microorganism, smaller than a bacteria, and it cannot grow or reproduce apart from a living cell. So a virus is a parasite, and it invades a living cell, and it uses that cell's machinery to keep itself alive and replicate itself. And if it replicates itself with errors, then it mutates. And if it doesn't replicate without errors, then it's a little bit easier to treat. So this is the background for what we're talking about. So generally, from a legal perspective, we would say that the burden of proof, that I've already met the burden of proof to show that vaccines are harmful. Aborted human fetuses, harvesting pus, right? Would you guys fairly say I've met the burden of proof to say that a vaccine probably should not be injected into a human body, especially a baby?
only on moral grounds at this point, because the burden of showing harm would be require some sort of scientific testing or some actual use in humans and documenting the effects in a scientific sense. But lots of people have questions on moral and for purposes of this, if you want to make that legal, you put it under a religious umbrella. With the involvement, for example, of aborted fetal tissue, which happens with probably most, if not all, of the live viral vaccines. Now, there are other vaccines that don't have live viral components. They'll have bacterial components that are not live vaccines, but certainly those that are live and that involve the use of aborted fetal tissue is going to raise questions and concerns for anybody concerned with abortion. And all that goes with that. And I had a client recently who, this was the first time I'd actually heard it put this way, who in her research discovered, and I think you just said something very similar to this, Greg, that there was porcine, I think, is something that comes from pigs that is ultimately ends up as an ingredient in vaccines. And so from her point of view, vaccines were then not kosher. Or at least the ones that had that particular ingredient, which apparently, according to her research, were several vaccines. So right off the bat, there are serious legal issues. And if doctors are administering vaccines and not checking to see if the person being injected or, in the case of a minor, their parent, has potential religious objections on those levels. Now, legally, doctors are not required to do this, so I'm speaking in more hypothetical terms. But if they're not checking to see if people would have, because these are issues that reasonably many people in the population would or may have objections to on religious grounds if they knew about it. Talking about some obscure, rare aspect here that only one in a million people would likely have a religious objection to. There are potentially many people, if they knew this information, would object to it. But in any case, if they're not checking, then in at least a hypothetical sense, that could be violating people's religious beliefs. And Debbie, please go ahead.
Yeah, in terms of kosher components, definitely Muslims and Jews and maybe even vegetarians. But I would like to say that for the Jewish religion, use of pig components, if it's life-saving, is acceptable. And the reason for that is the compatibility and the incredible similarity between the pig and human organs and the tissue structure. And that's why they are used as parts, you know, replacement parts for humans. And therefore, under the guideline of Judaism, a life is the most important thing to save. It can be used in a life-saving situation. The difference is that we're bypassing the normal immune system and we're injecting into young people who this is not necessarily life-saving, and it could possibly be not kosher in those instances if the rabbinic authority and supervision would say that it's not good, you know?
Let me jump in real quick, Greg. I want to clarify that while Debbie, I have no objection whatsoever with anything you just said from a position of your understanding of the Jewish religion. I want to say that as a purely legal matter, individuals can interpret their religion however they deem fit. And so if a person is Jewish and they feel that vaccines are not kosher, if their belief is that vaccines are not kosher, then legally that's a valid position for them to take.
The thing is, you're compromising a person's immunity because of the similarity, because you are tampering with human cellular structure by doing this, and DNA and all of these other parts in putting in a parasite. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I understand and I agree with you, but again, from a legal point of view, that's a scientific issue and not a religious one. So, again, it would, for purposes of somebody
right.
avoiding vaccines under available religious exemption laws or laws that allow religious objections, it would be just a question of what is the
who is your supervising rabbi? That would be probably important to know.
Well, the individual, legally the individual has the choice, bottom line, about what they believe and how they interpret their religion. So it doesn't matter if you're if you were the only Jew in the world who said, I think vaccines, you know, violate my religious beliefs. If it's true for you, it's legally valid for an exemption.
We have a lot of people in the chat room today, and I want to welcome and thank them for being here. You can chat your comment or question, or you can call in. We have a number. It is 347-945-6956, or you can click that Skype button and call in. I'll keep an eye on the chat. So Dr. Bob says, a virus of the kind that contaminated polio vaccines used decades ago may help cause some cases of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, said researchers in the journal The Lancet, and he gives the volume number. This is in the chat. It also says, could vaccines be related to the current pandemic, like multiple sclerosis, chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, attention deficit disorder, hyperactivity, and Lou Gehrig disease? Did you know that all vaccinations cause far more immediate and long-term neurological and physiological dangers to children than the disease is supposed to cure? He's added a little bit more. NIEHS grantee Philippe Grandjean, MD, has shown that higher levels of exposure to perfluorinated compounds, PFCs, reduce response to children. He is one of the first childhood exposure with immune. And he must have retrieved that from a journal. Go ahead.
Debbie, you're breaking up there, but I want to turn this back over to Greg because I don't want to do what we did last time and get away from this topic and have the hour slide by. So, okay. Greg, I want to get you back in on your main topic here.
Sure. Let me jump in and talk about more evidence that relates specifically to that question. So the polio vaccine was regarded in popular culture as being a cure or a solution to polio, but the facts on the ground actually contradict that popular culture claim. Between 1954 and 1963, approximately 98 million Americans received the polio vaccinations, which were contaminated with a carcinogenic monkey virus known as SV40. And this is very harmful to humans. It causes cancer, and polio was already on the if you look at charts that show the number of cases of polio, they were declining before the vaccine was implemented. And then they implement the vaccine, and then there's a new spike in polio cases. And then when you look at the people who got polio, there's a higher rate of getting polio if you receive the polio vaccine. So the evidence, therefore, shows that you're more likely to get polio if you get the vaccine, and second, the vaccine is contaminated with a carcinogenic monkey virus. Okay? So that is objective evidence of harm. And the example serves to illustrate the greater condition, which is occurring over and over, regardless of the vaccine. So the very first thing that I was saying is, what is a vaccine? So this is harvested pus that becomes a recombinant like virus inside a vaccine where you use aborted human fetuses and cows and chickens and create this chimera, this multi-celled beast, and you inject it into a human body. There's no way this is kosher, okay? There's just no way. I don't care what rabbi you bring to the table. It's not kosher. Okay, now let's continue. On the
evidence. Certainly hard to justify, but go ahead.
Right. And the what I'd like to show here is that the evidence shows that if you take vaccine, you are more likely to get the disease being vaccinated against And also, the vaccine that you are taking is going to compromise your immune system. And with a compromised immune system, you are more likely to contract debilitating diseases and even to die if you lack the real medicine on this planet. And the real medicine is nutrients,
okay,
and positive energy. And so the let's analyze how that works as evidence in terms of statistical fact. So take the 33 most developed nations in the world. Okay, the United States is one of them. Okay, Japan is one of them. A lot of the countries in Northern Europe are the most developed, meaning they have a lot of money, essentially. And so, and then we look at the amount of vaccines that are required in order to, you know, go into school or whatnot. And then we look at who has the highest infant mortality rates. So the United States administers the highest number of vaccines, and it also has either the highest or the second highest number of infant deaths, okay? And it's not just the highest number of vaccines, it's the schedules. Like, for example, the MMR vaccine, measles, mumps, and rubella. There's no scientific reason why all three of those are given at the same time. In fact, it's been documented that the only reason they're all given at the same time is for the convenience of the medical establishment. And so the schedule, the vaccination schedule, also contributes to further harming the immune system. And then if you look at so what we're showing here is that the more vaccines that a population receives, the higher its infant mortality rate. Okay? And
there was actually a study documenting that very fact, Greg. I just want to support what you're saying. There was a study published last year that showed, did a statistical analysis of countries around the world, the infant mortality rates and the vaccine schedules, and found that, concluded scientifically, that as a country has higher numbers of immunizations that they administer to children, the infant mortality goes up. The World Health Organization, or branch of them that looks at infant mortality, puts the U.S. at something like 35th. The CIA fact book actually lists us as of 2012 as being 49th. We're not even, but by either one, we're not even in those top 30 or so industrialized nations. We have here in the U.S., we administer the greatest number of vaccines, and we have a third world infant mortality rate.
Right, and the countries, the two developed countries that require children to be immunized the least, have the lowest infant mortality rate. So how about that? High number of vaccines, high infant mortality rate. Low number of vaccines, low infant mortality rate. And then when you go into the third world, where vaccines are prolific, you know, and then also, and here's the essence of what I was saying, is that it's the combination. You get a lot of vaccines all close together to a little child, and then on top of that, in the third world, you have a lack of nutrition and hygiene and clean water, and it is a recipe for disaster. And that is the greater point about the depopulation agenda.
So that you don't even have to,
like,
you know, in the U.S. where we're healthier, you've got to get more vaccines to achieve that goal then, huh?
Oh, pardon?
In the U.S. where we're healthier, you have to administer more vaccines to achieve the same goal.
I think I'm missing the point.
You're saying that in third world nations, you add the potential harm from vaccines to the endemic conditions of undernourishment and poor sanitation and other conditions consistent and typical of poverty, and you have a disaster. And so my response to that is, but here in the U.S., where for the most part we don't, or certainly to a far lesser degree, we don't have those conditions, you've got to administer more vaccines to achieve the same goal. It was a little bit of a sarcastic comment, but not necessarily so.
I get it now. Yeah, and you know, the junk food culture of America also leads to the high infant mortality rate, in the sense that the mother is eating junk food. So,
but please continue.
When we look at the manufacture of vaccines as well, meaning the pharmaceutical companies, the handful of pharmaceutical companies that have taken upon themselves the responsibility to manufacture vaccines for the world's population, we find that much of them are made in China, and that the one funding this vaccine production is the Rockefeller cartel, which is John D. Rockefeller and the American industrialist who spawned the medical pharmaceutical complex essentially today. And apparently, over 90% of all vaccines that are used in U.S. and Europe are made in China, and they are primarily funded by this Rockefeller syndicate. And when we look back at the published annual reports of the Rockefeller Foundation, we find that they have always been involved in trying to figure out anti-fertility vaccines and trying to work on ways to lower the population. These are admitted statements in their published annual reports. Okay? And if you want the details on those quotes, you can go to part one of our episode, which was last month. So I guess, would you guys like me to go into that a little bit more or just give a citation?
Maybe just a brief summary for anyone who wasn't listening last month.
Sure. Essentially what we did is we took the case study of the Gossypol anti-fertility compound, which is in cottonseed. And the Rockefeller Syndicate was always trying to figure out how they could get this anti-fertility component into vaccines in such a small quantity without reducing its anti-fertility component. And then they finally figured out a way, and now it's in vaccine. The Rockefellers have a long history of this, and they've combined their efforts with other major players who have a lot of money, for example, Bill Gates. And so last time we talked about the quote from Bill Gates where he says, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, we could lower the population by perhaps 10 or 15%. So that's a quote.
I've got to interject a comment here because that's a quote that's been taken out of context, and I'm not going to defend Bill Gates, but that quote has been misunderstood. His theory is that with vaccines, fewer children in third world countries will be dying, and then parents over time will not be wanting to have as many children. They won't have as many children, and there will be some sort of 10-year or so lag time between the cause and effect there. But a lot of people have taken
I think there's always a plausible deniability there, and I guess what I'm trying to say is that this is it's just one small item of evidence. It's not an irrefutable item of evidence, but it's there.
Well, no, it's something that he said. It's just something that's been taken out of context as meaning that Bill Gates wants to kill people with vaccines. I'm not saying he doesn't want to kill people with vaccines. I'm saying that comment is in support of a different rationale. Now, I don't happen to think the idea sounds plausible. I don't think that people in the third world will stop having children because more of their children survive, if that were even the case. But just a real quick piece of counter evidence to that very thing there, the situation you were describing here in America back in the 1950s, where polio had already been declining on its own, first of all, and that the introduction of the first polio vaccine actually reversed that decline. And this is very well documented, although the definition of polio was changed so that on paper it looked like polio was further declining after the vaccines. We've seen the exact same thing happen very recently in India. It's just been in the last few weeks that there's been this broad declaration of we have finally eliminated polio in India, and yet there's this other disease that is clinically indistinguishable from polio that happens to only be showing up in the vaccinated children, and it actually has a higher mortality rate than polio, but it's not polio because we've eradicated polio. And what we've got is, vaccine-induced condition that is really the same or worse, and it's just the same story again now in India that we saw 50, 60 years ago here in the U.S.
That's the exact example that I'm talking about, Alan, yes. It's that. So and Bill Gates funded that the Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunizations, Gavi, and their goal is basically to vaccinate everyone on the planet. And what they do is they coerce governments into allowing the organization into the third world countries to vaccinate their citizens, and the agreements are not always voluntary. So, for example, Malawi children were forcibly vaccinated at gunpoint in 2011. Gates and the WHO were in India, just as you said, vaccinating children for polio, when all of a sudden this strange case of non-polio paralysis begins to strike those who had recently been vaccinated. You see, so essentially what they do is they vaccinate these children for polio, and then the children then contract paralysis. But instead of calling it polio, they call it non-polio paralysis. You know?
Because it's supposedly not the wild disease that's causing
striking evidence of harm. And in Gavi, you know, again, they're blamed for deaths in Pakistan. It's the same type of thing. They administer these polio vaccines, and it results in casualties and paralysis. And then the World Health Organization is also one of Gavi's partners, which is one of the things that I want to get into to show the relationship between these organizations. So maybe that's what we should get into next. Okay. So what is the World Health Organization? Okay. The World Health Organization is an arm of the United Nations, and they are the best way to say it. I want to talk about the Nazi connection, because it was the Nazis who funded this. Okay, so there's a research paper called Nutricide, The Killing Camps of Codex Alimentarius, or How the Nazis Took Over the World Food Supply. And in there we find a connection between the guy who started the or who was instrumental in the death camps of World War II, the concentration camps, named Fritz Termeer. He was, and so he later becomes the president of Bayer Pharmaceuticals in the United States after he's released from prison. And then he lobbies the UN to take control of the world's food supply. And then in 1963, the UN asked the WHO to run the Codex Alimentarius Commission. And so what we find is this this connection between the Nazis and vaccines and food. And the Nazis had a history of vaccinating their populations as well. Like in our last show, we gave the example where I forget what it was. Well, I think it might have been measles was the vaccine. But in Germany, they had almost no cases of measles. Okay, and then they start implementing the vaccine, the measles vaccine, and then all of a sudden there's hundreds of thousands or like 100,000 cases of measles. But if you go right across the way over to, I think it was Norway, there were only like 20 cases of measles. And what was it? What was unique about Norway? They didn't have the vaccine. So again, here's an example. The vaccine causes the very disease that they claim is being vaccinated against. Or alternatively, if it doesn't cause that disease, it causes another disease. And that's because that's the whole point. It's to depopulate the planet. Okay. And the Nazis, they also used fluoride in their concentration camps, which was meant to dumb down the people, and that's something that's done today as well. And these Nazi leaders were self-described, you know, humanitarians, self-described environmentalists. They claimed to be doing, you know, the benefit of mankind. And this guy, Fritz Termeer, he also, in addition to running, helping run the death camps, it was a connection that he had to the health care. Yeah, this is it. So Germany had 220 health, they call them health courts, which determined who would be involuntarily sterilized before the concentration, and this was before the concentration camps were in full swing. And so it's interesting to note the semantics here. You know, they called it a health court, you know. And how do we use the word health here in America? You know, it's always, you know, health care, but really, you know, anyone who gets processed through the healthcare system know that it's more illness care. It's more about you know, promoting the medical pharmaceutical complex than it is actually about healthcare. Because again, the real health here is in your natural remedies. Okay.
So let me ask you an
important spiritual message as well. You know, when I kicked off the show by talking about what a vaccine is. Remember, it's harvested pus that becomes a chimera. And what a virus is, it's something that needs to, it's a parasite. It invades a living thing, and it has to use that thing to keep itself alive. And I think there's a greater spiritual message here about what a depopulation effort is doing in the medical context, and how it's directed to fertility and killing the seed as a spiritual, it has a spiritual connection, a spiritual effect. And I wanted to roundtable that with you guys and gather your thoughts.
It looks to me like we've lost Debbie. I don't know if she's going to be calling back in or not, but we'll see. I have a couple, if not many, thoughts, because this is such a intriguing and multifaceted topic we're on here. But let me see if I can get one or two of them out. I feel, first of all, Greg, you have always impressed me as someone who is meticulous in research and documentation. I just really want to commend you again for that, as always. But I have a question with regard to then what you have found and what we're discussing here about the idea of a depopulation agenda or fertility control and so forth. Because there's certainly lots of evidence that we've already discussed and lots more that we could discuss supporting the general principles here. How much, in your own investigation of this issue, how much have you seen that explicitly names or cites either depopulation specifically or fertility control versus conclusions you find that are just unavoidable based on the evidence, but might ultimately be inferences? And you made comment a little bit earlier, already partially at least answering this question, by there being documentation of specific goals. And I myself saw information just this past week referring to polysorbate 80 being listed as a preferred ingredient in a patent for a infertility-inducing vaccine. So it's pretty clear that there has been very specific and deliberate research, for example, to develop vaccines that would have the purpose of causing or controlling infertility or fertility-related vaccines. So that seems pretty indisputable to me. That's explicit information that's out there. What else have you got, and where are you personally or professionally on the issue in terms of explicit versus inference?
Yeah, I think that I'm finding a massive amount of explicit, direct, objective evidence of criminal activity, intentional criminal activity designed to depopulate the planet using vaccines.
And I'm assuming you're using the word criminal.
Direct evidence, and this was aired on the BBC show, the BBC channel, in a documentary titled The Human Laboratory in 1995. You can check out the transcript if you like. It's online. And it's just, they were covering the evidence, the objective evidence, that the tetanus vaccines were contaminated with anti-fertility compounds, okay, HCG, human chorionic gonadotropin. And these vaccines were deployed across multiple third world countries. And we have testimonial evidence. And again, most cases are hinge on testimonial evidence. That's just how law works. And in a press release, the American Life League noted that tetanus programs conducted in the Philippines in 1995 were arousing suspicion from the Catholic health workers, since they were directed at women in their childbearing years, which is an oddity because tetanus affects men and women, old and young alike. So why were tetanus vaccines, which were contaminated with an anti-fertility compound, directed specifically at women in their childbearing years, when tetanus affects everybody? It doesn't add up.
Right, and we've seen this from what I've heard, reports that fertility or infertility-causing vaccines have been experimented with in the Philippines, but also in some populations in Central and or South America, that this seems to be something that has gone on in different areas, that clearly there's some experimentation with that that's well documented. Most disturbingly, without the knowledge and awareness of the people there, they were unwitting participants in this sort of thing. But I was, excuse me for having interrupted earlier, I was just going to say, and when you use the word criminal, I presume what you mean is this is something that is causing harm or death or other, you know, physical harm to people without their knowledge and consent and on the deliberate part of those doing so, and then that would necessarily then constitute some kind of violation of criminal law, perhaps international law as well as various countries' laws involved. Some people will use the word criminal as more in a general sense, more as an opinion than as an assertion of violation of law. And that's all. I was just wanting to clarify your use of that word.
Yeah. And I think, you know, let's take an example. Jane Burgermeister is a useful source of information, and she uses the word criminal intent. And she lays out a case on her website, which is BirdFlu666. And she looks at the case example of Baxter, which is a corporation that manufactures vaccines. And she looks at the WHO, the case example of the bird flu in 2009. And what she found is that Baxter had contaminated 72 kilos of this in an Austrian lab, nearly sparking the bird flu pandemic. And she found that the WHO had supplied the virus to Baxter, okay, in Austria, to their Austrian lab, and Baxter was supposed to manufacture 72 kilos of this vaccine material. And then Baxter subsequently sends this material out to 16 labs under a false label designating the contaminated product as a vaccine material, which nearly triggers the pandemic. And Baxter has to adhere to biosafety level 3 regulations when handling a dangerous virus such as bird flu. So how could this have been contaminated without some criminal intent?
Yeah, and the medical people I've spoken to about this assure me that this is not something that could have happened by accident, or that a single rogue employee with a key could have, slipped in at night and dumped a little vial of bird flu into the vat and just giggled and, you know, walked away. This is something that a group of people would had to have known was going on. And I only see two possible conclusions. You know, I don't pretend to know what was going on in the minds of the people involved, but I can only see two possibilities. One, they were looking at trying to create illness so that they would then have a population of sick people to sell other products to treat or presumptively heal or whatever. Or they're trying to kill people. And either way, people would die. And it was only by virtue of the fact that some people in the Czech Republic tested it, and they didn't have to, is my understanding. They just, for whatever reason, chose to test it. They tested this on some ferrets, and all the ferrets died, and that's how they managed to avert what might have been, who knows, how profound an international disaster there. So, but I just don't...
We find that these viruses that are... that actually... end up do causing, you know, massive death are manufactured in laboratories. Like, for example, the 1918, killer strain of the flu. Go to the website of True Ott. He's a PhD and covers new evidence that the swine flu pandemic is man-made. And the Novartis, which is a company, their patent, which details that, that they wanted, the patent on this thing. So I think what we're looking at is a military operation where you have a real military-industrial medical complex, which is unleashing these things on the populace. One example would be, we go back again to World War II, and World War One? The Spanish flu in World War One, and the soldiers were coming home, and after they had received all these vaccines on their bases, right? And it's this, and the public is sold on this, like, oh no, the soldiers are coming home with this virus that was contracted in foreign lands, rather than the reality was that it was given to these soldiers through the vaccines. But in the public, they called it the Spanish flu, making it seem like it came from, the Spanish people. And this was, again, a Rockefeller operation. So we find this this military connection with the private pharmaceutical companies.
We saw some really interesting information during and since the 2009-10 swine flu pandemic that suggested that the swine flu virus involved there had elements from viruses from different parts of the world, and the odds of that having happened naturally are just so remote, if not just for any practical purposes, impossible, really strongly suggesting that that virus had been engineered as well. Greg, do you have an opinion based on your information on this topic collectively to date, or thoughts about either what are we dealing with currently, or what might we be facing imminently or otherwise in the near future, given the history? If this is something that has gone on historically and repeatedly for many decades at this point, in one manner, style, degree, or another, do you see any acceleration? Do you see us moving into something even more bold or bigger or more of the same, or are they done doing that? Where do you think we're headed in terms of this agenda and possible things we might see?
Yes. Thank you for that question. That's exactly what I want to talk about. And it's also a question that was raised in the chat room by Bob. Okay. And it's, you know, is this a pattern? Is this gonna keep happening? As Bob asked, could vaccines be related to the current and coming plagues and epidemics? Okay, so I think the answer is yes. The medical pharmaceutical industrial complex is enormous, and if you go to globalresearch.ca, you can find books written by F. William Engel and Michael Trasiadovsky, which go into detail on that medical industrial complex and how they use food and vaccines as weapons against the populace. Okay? And so as they are growing and getting larger, they are stockpiling these vaccines. And so there is a reasonable and rational basis to conclude that they are likely to use them. There are military installations throughout the United States that are devoted to creating biological weapons, like Fort Detrick, for example. And so when is the next, you know, plague going to start? It looks like they tried to do it in 2009 with the bird flu, and they got caught because, like, for example, there was that one lab tech who discovered that this virus was contaminated, you know? Imagine if that wasn't discovered. I mean, if they discovered the vaccine was contaminated, rather. And so,
let me just mention real quickly on that point that they had what was presumed to be or purported to be seasonal flu vaccine material, but that was contaminated with live avian bird flu. And the bird flu virus is particularly lethal, but not particularly transmissible. The seasonal flu virus is just the opposite, not particularly lethal, but it is particularly transmissible. And if they had in combination the potential then for something to be highly transmissible and highly lethal, and it's really disturbing to think what might have happened if that had actually been broadly distributed and used.
That's right. And again, you know, we shouldn't use the term bird flu virus. Really, we should use the term military-grade bird flu virus. I mean, let's make no mistake, this was manufactured in a laboratory, okay? And again, remember how these things are manufactured. They harvest the virus. They harvest the pus from a human and then recombine it with the cellular structure of animals on the earth, and then create this chimera, this beast, and then call it a vaccine, and then inject it into the population. Okay? That is the modus operandi of this depopulation agenda.
I'm guessing you're never going to get a job as a marketing professional and promoter for the vaccine industry. but please continue. We are, the time flies. It always does. We're down to roughly 5 minutes or so. So where can you take us here in these last few minutes?
Yes, let's go and talk about, because I want to talk about that relationship of history repeating itself. The very first example of a deadly outbreak of a virus where people reacted harshly and started blaming the Jewish people was the Black Plague of the year 1348 to 1350. The Black Plague struck Asia, it struck Europe. Approximately one-third of the population was deceased within a couple years, and the people at the time in Europe blamed the Jewish people. They said the Jews are poisoning the wells, and they tortured Jewish people, they burned them, they just generally persecuted them. It was so bad, Pope Clement, an evil individual by himself, had to issue an order, you know, stopping the persecution of the Jews. It was a public relations thing, I'm sure, but this happened, and the Jewish people had to flee. And where did they flee? Primarily Poland, and they where they had to go into essentially what was the wilderness, where they were away from this virus and away from the mobs of people trying to kill them, and a lot of these people who were trying to kill them were so-called Christian knights, the Teutonic Knights. Okay. So make no mistake, there is a massive power structure in the world today, just as there was then, that is based on this, like, holy claim, holier than thou idea, you know, that that we can point the finger at each other and kill one another. And that is what the depopulation agenda is geared toward. It is a form of murder. And it is a murder that begins in the heart. If you hate your fellow man, if you try to blame your fellow man for a virus, for example, this is going to lead toward problems. And what we need to do as a society, and this is what I wanted to get to, our solutions here, we need to do as a society is love one another, forgive one another, share natural remedies, share organic resources, and begin to try to walk that path, regardless of whether that is a path that will ultimately take place for our age. For this section of humanity, you can do it for yourself. And perhaps that's always been the question, whether you can do it for yourself.
I think there's implicit in the idea of a depopulation, which presumably would be at least in part because of a belief that we have an overpopulation problem or will have one eventually if we don't. And not, currently, that might be a regional question more than a total world population. And many people will have a lot of different opinions about what the ultimate capacity of the Earth is in terms of human population. But whatever that capacity ultimately is, we can't sustain growth indefinitely because it's a finite planet. But implicit in the idea of a need, therefore, you have to depopulate against people's wishes or without their knowledge or whatever, it really suggests that humans aren't capable of solving that problem on their own. And I really beg to differ with that assumption to the extent, if any, that that is part of what drives a depopulation or fertility control agenda. Human beings are amazingly resourceful critters, and we have solved or dealt with so many different kinds of problems to get to where we are. And I think this is one we're fully capable of solving, too. And, Greg, I think you really hit it on the head there, that the starting place to that is exactly the opposite of what would be involved or necessary for depopulation. It would be to start with love and acceptance. Realizing the value of all of us and allow and create a space for collaboration and interaction and resourcefulness. And that's how we'll maximize the potential and the resourcefulness of human beings rather than some hate or at best psychotically indifferent opinion about how certain people don't matter. We'll just get rid of some, and you know, then the rest of us who are here will live comfortably with the available resources. But let me see if Debbie is back in with us. She may be, or else perhaps we have a caller.
As you're doing that, I'm going
to. Hello, this is Debbie. Are you able to hear me?
We've got you back, Debbie. Sorry that you,
yeah,
you were having technical
nothing else
difficulties
my
there.
My computer is working, so this is the only thing that's going on now.
Okay, well, we're glad to have you back in here to help us close out the next couple of minutes. Do you have some thoughts you want to add in there, Debbie?
No. Do you want to summarize what you have been saying so that I get a feel for that?
Greg, you want to give us any quick summary of our thoughts today and anything else you want to say about your work or where folks can find you or anything like that?
Yeah, sure. If I've proposed a new constitution for the United States to undo this military-industrial complex and return to simpler roots, what I found is that in drafting proposed laws for a new society, it almost doesn't matter what laws you have. If you have a society filled with destructive actors, it doesn't matter what laws you write for them. They will continue to destroy things. And so I think change has to begin from the heart and from the mind before any laws can fix this.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, any adequate system will do if you have good people. Any perfect system will fail if you have evil people.
This was very similar to the ending of my other show, and basically all forms of good and evil are going to be in the world. How do we bring out the good? It's going to be a challenge. And if anybody has ideas, we would love to hear them.
Well, we're here every Thursday, of course, at noon Eastern time and 9 a.m. Pacific time. And Greg's here with us once a month. And we'd be happy to have any listener input with the chat or call in. Numbers are on blogtalkradio.com website for Homeopathy World Community. And would love to have your questions or input, or you can email us in between shows and ask for topics to be discussed. I'm Alan Phillips at attorney@vaccinerights.com. And Debbie Bruck at homeopathyworldcommunity@gmail.com. Did I get that right, Debbie?
Yes.
Okay, great. Let's make sure. I think we're about at a stopping point here for today. Any closing comments, Debbie?
People can listen to the archives anytime they're available. And keep spreading the news, the good news, whatever you have. And we're looking forward to having Greg back next month. To continue.
Greg, you'll be back with us next month?
All right.
Great. Well, we're looking forward to it. Thank you so much, Greg. You always, as I say, prepare so well and have a wealth of information, and I learn something every time you're on. So please keep coming back. We'll see you next month, and folks, rest of you, we'll see you next week.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S. with co-hosts Alan Phillips and Debbie Bruck. On Homeopathy World Community Radio, remember to educate before you vaccinate. Allow our souls to shine.